Da 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 da. So good, because you'll be able to see if it fucks up.
Yep, that's the plan.
Hello and welcome to A Nice Cup of Histity, a podcast where me and my best friend Carrie over here, say hello.
Yeah.
We sit and we discuss historical stuff. People, places, events.
Of historical import.
Yeah, I don't know why we're doing a random intro for this one, but it's been a while, we've got new followers, we thought we'd say hey.
Hi.
And we've decided that we went shopping today to buy steak, because we love meat. Wait.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with it. And we found these new energy drinks by Tyson Fury, and they're called Furosity, which I love.
Yeah.
And we've got different flavours. So we thought we'd open it and just to see how it goes and get our live reactions. Whether this actually goes out on the podcast, I don't know. So if you're listening into this, hi. If it's just us, hey dude.
Yeah. So mine is black and blue raspberry, apparently.
Mine is black and blue.
Yeah.
Mine is sour apple punch.
All right, okay.
And there also was a sour cherry knockout.
Yeah.
And original.
Yeah.
Right.
We are not endorsing any particular energy drinks, just FYI, no. If it does go out live, other energy drinks are available, but we've never tried these before, so why the fuck not?
Yeah, and Tyson Fury, if you want some average podcasters to sponsor.
Yep. We can distinctly averagely promote your stuff.
Okay, it smells very apple-y.
That smells like blue. Genuinely, have a sniff, it smells like blue.
Have a sniff, it smells like apple.
Oh, okay. That smells like apple with a tang.
Okay.
But also slightly petrol-y.
Cheers to Furosity.
Charles.
Really does sound like an advert. We aren't sponsored, I promise.
That's not bad.
No. We're switching now. They're all right.
Yours tastes like fizzy sours.
I see this lovely. Unlike my opponent, Furosity packs a real punch.
Yep. So.
Anyway, should we get to this week's podcast?
Yes. Chock full of energy drink.
This could go great. I think we need a bit of energy because today is a dark cup episode. And it is so dark that it actually comes with
a
listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, it's yeah.
So maybe we need these to keep us upbeat from the things that we're about to discuss with the lovely people of the Tinterweb.
Although at the same time, I don't think we should overly be laughing too much about this one.
No, we won't. We'll be serious when we need to be.
Yes. So, welcome to a dark
dastardy.
This week, we set sail to a small island off the coast of Italy that casts a big shadow in the realm of paranormal. Corveglia Island. I'm sorry if I say that wrong. I'm not Italian. Playing host to the worst aspects of humanity, this small area is all but saturated in blood and death. Warning, this episode does contain some graphic descriptions and is not for the faint of heart. Listener discretion is advised.
And in this week's ridiculous death, we discover that blindly following the law isn't always the best idea.
So, lock the doors, turn on the lights, make sure you have your plague mask nearby, and let's
get dark.
Let's talk a little bit about the island itself and give you some background.
I just want to do a disclaimer for myself. If you're a long-time listener of A Nice Cup of Histity, or TARBIS as it was before, I'm not good with them words. I apologise if I say things incorrectly. You may have also noticed that if I can't pronounce something, I just stop talking and Carrie fills in.
Yeah.
But I feel that it may be some in this, so I'm apologising now.
Yes. So, Paveglia Island is located between Venice and Lido in the Venetian Lagoon in northern Italy. It's divided roughly in two by a narrow canal and totals approximately 17 acres, which is 0.02 miles squared or 0.068 kilometres squared. So it's pretty small. You can probably walk around the outer edge of the island in an hour or so, though after hearing this episode, you might not want to.
Yeah, definitely. The island can be reached by boat from the Piazza San Marco, or St. Mark's Square, in Venice.
Paveglia first appears in known historical records at around 421 CE/AD, depending on which one you follow, when it was used as a refuge for Roman citizens fleeing barbarian invasion. when we say barbarian, this was pretty much used as a blanket term for anybody that wasn't part of the civilised Roman Empire, both East and West, because it did split into two at one point. But in this particular case, we're referring to the tribes known as the Goths and the Huns. Not the leather-wearing, pale makeup-wearing kind of Goths. These were a lot more scarier, mainly because they were armed.
That's creepy.
Yep.
When the Justinian Plague ravaged the area in the 6th century, Pavalia and some of the small surrounding islands were used as quarantine zones for the infected and became their final resting place. This would not be the last time that the island was so used.
Another wave of refugees fleeing the attack of the Lombard tribes in Padua and Este arrived in the 8th century.
Gradually, things returned to normal and the population of Pavalia steadied and began to grow, increasing over the following centuries until it was significant enough to warrant being governed by a podesta,
yep,
the equivalent of a magistrate, basically the highest civil official that the area had at the time.
Yeah, so like, kind of like a mayor, but with a bit more clout.
Fair one.
A castle fortress was constructed and a small village existed on the island, helping when Venice was besieged by the Franks, the tribe that founded modern-day France. France.
That's cool. Did not know that.
That was in the early 9th century.
Mm-hmm.
For their efforts, they were granted things like tax exemptions, which was a nice little boon for them.
Yep. In 1379, Venice came under attack from the nearby...
Genoa.
In the...
Liguria.
...region of northwest Italy. A big competing maritime power in the region and having the distinction of being one of the oldest continually inhabited cities in the world. They also invented jeans in the 14th century, no less.
Yeah, they invented jeans. Genoa, jeans.
Ha! Huh?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I didn't know that until...
I enjoyed that little tidbit.
You are welcome. There was a bit of a kerfuffle between Genoa and Venice over maritime trading rights. I mean, that is putting it mildly. And it all got a bit heated. As a result, the citizens of Pavalia were evacuated to the nearby island of Giudecca.
Barely occupied for a millennium, and already Pavalia had hosted people who had been displaced, broken, made homeless by war and illness. Then it's lost those people to yet another conflict. This was just the start for its troubled little island.
Yep, it's like, home, nope. Home, nope. Home, nope. It's not good for them. It was abandoned and mostly uninhabited for the next 148 years. There was a glimmer of hope in 1527 when the Doge, who was the elected head of state for Venice, offered the island to monks from the Order of the Camaldolese Hermits of Mount Corona for the founding of a monastery. It was not to be, however, because the order refused the offer.
So that's a little bit strange. This whole island is about, like, plague and there's Mount Corona.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, the Order of Mount Corona and they refused it. So how bad does a plague island have to be when an Order of Mount Corona refuses?
Well.
Yep.
Maybe they knew. The monks had foresight.
They're like, our time has not yet come.
As countries grew and trade increased, plague continued to lurk like a growing spectre over the civilization, striking in increasingly devastating waves. Pavalia began to develop a reputation as a convenient quarantine site for its victims.
In the mid-1600s, Pavalia, along with four other islands in the lagoon, was used as the location of an octagonal fort designed to protect the harbour from incoming enemy vessels, so it allowed them to see from all directions, and it kept Venice secure, but still the plague victims kept coming.
The bubonic plague struck Europe in 1348, bringing devastation like never seen before and changing the social and economic face of the old world forever. The Venetians acted quickly, recognising that the disease often travelled on incoming ships, yep, and setting up what has been credited as the first modern quarantine system.
They detained ships at Pavalia Island for a period of 40 days. Now, the Italian word for 40 is quaranta, the beginning of the word quarantine. So that's why quarantine is 40 days.
That's fun.
Not fun,
but you know what I mean.
It's a fun fact.
Yes.
But that wait time was kill or cure, and for many it was the former.
This set off a trend across the country, with many city-states and republics across Italy exiling the infected for quarantine. The practice later spread to other areas of Europe and even the New World in the following centuries as the plague struck again and again. Ellis Island in New York, now home to the world-famous Statue of Liberty, was once a plague quarantine station.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They don't really tell you that in the guidebooks, do they?
No, they don't.
In Venice, the quarantine stations were known as lazaretti, and no ship would pass them without going through the 40 days. Pavalia Island soon established itself as the most important of the lazaretti, but it did not save them. Over half of Venice's citizens were lost to the Black Death in the 1300s, and the dead needed to go somewhere.
Day in, day out, without break, there were workers on the lazaretti collecting the dead, throwing them into pits that soon became mass graves. Many were still alive when they were buried. That's horrendous. That's like one of the worst nightmares.
Yeah.
All hope given up on them by that point. As bodies decomposed and bloated, organs would explode within the corpses, forcing blood out through the mouth and giving rise to a belief that vampires could be found among the dead. We'll come back to that one near the end.
Yeah, that's a little interesting fact. I'll explain like some terms around that in a bit. As we said earlier, the Black Death was not the only instance of plague that the people of Europe had to contend with. It ebbed and it flowed over the following centuries until rising again in the 16 and 1700s in the form of what we Brits call the Great Plague. Whilst deaths did not reach the heights of the 1300s pandemic, it wasn't far off, and medicine had not advanced as far as some would have had you believe at the time.
Okay, you're going to take this one. In 1777, the
Magistrato alla Sanità,
or Public Health Office, for Venice declared Pavalia Island as the primary plague checkpoint for the Republic. All ships wanted to sail into ports of Venice had to stop at Pavalia for inspection. Any signs of the plague and they would be forced to quarantine there. It sounds like this was in the 1700s, but it sounds very similar to certain things that we've done since COVID.
Yeah.
Checkpoints, testing.
Yeah, quarantine areas, like keeping people locked up in quarantine. Yeah, it sounds very similar. So this is obviously where it originated from, where the idea of the quarantine came from. But yeah, it's still in practice today, but with better medicine.
Yeah, and less mass graves.
Yes, and the doctors look a little bit different.
Just a tad.
Because back then, the doctors roamed around in their black clothes and beaked plague masks, looking like carrion crows amongst the infected. And what they put in those beaks is they'd either put like sponges or cloths with vinegar or like oils in.
And wee.
Or they put posies and wee. Yeah, urine.
So you're saying all these fancy ones like pee?
Yeah, there's a pee. And it was believed that the plague was airborne, that it could be caught via vapours. So if you couldn't smell it, you couldn't catch it. No, it didn't work that way. Some tried to help the sick. Others instead only observed or experimented with cruel cures.
More and more died until the plague pits could no longer hold them. It was only 17 years ago, remember? Sorry. 17 acres. I apologise. My brain did not work. It's only 17 acres, remember, this whole island. And the sick just kept dying. So huge bonfires were lit, with the dead and dying being tossed into the flames, the ashes scattered across the island. Some corpses were tossed from the small cliffs into the lagoon below, only to wash up again on shore, and some still wash up to this day.
Eventually, the plague died away, pardon the pun, but few could stomach Pavalia Island.
In 1805, Napoleon Bonaparte used the island as a depot and armoury for French troops, destroying the church of San
Vitale
in the process. Only the bell tower remained, turning into a lighthouse later.
The lazaretto and armoury were officially closed in 1814, and so Pavalia fell into abandonment once more, a stain on the otherwise serene Venetian landscape. But it was not going to be left that way forever.
It's really weird, because you don't think of somewhere like this in Venice. You think Venice, you think beauty, you think romance, you think stunning architecture and stuff.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect mass plague graves, do you know what I mean?
No, but if you see pictures of it, like, you look at pictures of Venice and it is very picturesque, as you say, but you look at pictures of Pavalia and it's, you can see Pavalia from Venice. It's so overgrown, it's weedy, it's decrepit, it looks like your stereotypical haunted house on an island. We'll come back to that bit. In 1922, sorry, I should take a sip of my drink, Venetians tried again to utilise Pavalia, with hope for it to be a peaceful place for healing and caring. They built a mental hospital there, with trained doctors and nurses to help care for the sick, but by now the island's darkness was infectious.
Cool, what a line, Carrie.
Thank you.
Rumours soon spread to the mainland that one of the doctors would carry out experimental treatments on his patients. Shock therapies, lobotomies and other cures, in inverted commas, would be deemed torture today. He would use instruments such as hammers, chisels and drills without any real form of anaesthesia or proper sanitation.
Yeah, so if the procedure didn't get you, chances are the infection would. Look back through the history of asylums or sanatoriums, even recently. It's sadly too familiar a story. Those who were cast out from society, dehumanised because of how their minds worked differently, because they didn't fit in, even those who were seen as a burden, such as older unmarried women or homosexuals, were all easy prey for someone wanting to experiment. After all, they're unlikely to be missed if it goes wrong.
But in this case, the doctor received his comeuppance. We'll get back to him again shortly.
Interesting fact, someone got admitted to the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in America for reading a novel. Yeah.
A specific novel?
I don't know, but if that's the case, we'd be screwed.
Yep.
Wow. In 1968, the hospital finally closed its doors and Paveglia was once again left abandoned for a short stint of time. The northern part of the island was again used for agriculture and a vineyard, but that soon fell flat. Though the grapes do still grow to this day because the soil there is very rich.
Don't know if I'd want to drink a bottle of wine that was grown with grapes from a mass grave.
Yeah, it's human ash wine.
Yeah. In 2014, Venice tried to sell the island in an auction, but the deal didn't go through, surprisingly. The island is off limits to visitors without a permit, which can take up to a couple of years to come through. It doesn't stop intrepid ghost hunters and urban explorers from trying, though, and more than a few stories have come from it.
Most recently, the Italian government has started a reconstruction project on the grounds, trying to restore some of the buildings and prevent further erosion damage to the coastline. So there is hope that tourists may be able to visit one day. But what about what's already there?
Would you want to go?
Yes, I would be intrigued, just from the historical point of view. And also my interest in the paranormal, I'd want to go, but at the same time, I would not go alone.
But it is claimed, and there may be a reason for that, dude, it's claimed that over 160,000 people were buried on Paveglia Island as a result of the plague alone, and countless more were burned or thrown out to sea.
17 acres, 160,000 buried.
There must be someone every step.
Pretty much.
There has to be.
Yeah. You don't take a step without stepping on bone.
That's insane. Without the ones, like we've said, that were burnt or thrown in the sea.
Yep. So that's the history of Paveglia Island. Pretty grim, isn't it?
It's horrendous, actually.
But this is a Dark Cup episode, and we're guessing you're still listening to hear what comes next. After the dead are buried and burnt. The thing I was going to come back to later on, there is a thing in archaeology called a deviant burial. So you've got the ways that people are buried, like either with grave goods or in Christian burials facing a certain way, etc., etc. A deviant burial is a burial from a time frame that does not fit the normal customs of that time frame. Paveglia Island, there are a few that have been found with stones in their mouth. This is a deviant burial consistent with the mythology of vampirism.
Oh.
So they would put a stone in the mouth to stop the vampire teeth from growing, to stop them from coming back, and they would come back to life and crunch down and break their teeth and not be able to be vampires. And that's why, like earlier when it said about they were being buried alive and the organs would putrefy, the blood would come out, they would then go to dig up that area to put another body in and see this body there that was only recently starting to decompose because they were buried alive with blood out of their mouth and think, oh, vampire, stone in the mouth.
That's creepy and a bit insane.
A little bit. But you find examples of burials like that across the world, including most recently there was a batch found in Ireland.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, that was my little segue, sorry. When the island is abandoned by the living and everything goes quiet, when the sun goes down and a darkness so deep sets in that even the stars strain to be seen, what happens then?
Well, Paveglia doesn't disappoint on that score either. Let's start by going back to that cruel doctor, shall we? The one who used his patients for experimental procedures. What happened to him?
Well, local legend states that he wanted fame and recognition for his work. He wanted to cure some of the ailments that his poor patients suffered for in their minds. That's fair.
It sounds like a nice thing.
One of these ailments was the claim that his patients often saw the ghosts of plague victims. At night as they slept, they heard the cries of the sick and dying. They could smell the bodies burning. They saw the old doctors walking around in their bird-like masks, tormenting them. So the doctor experimented, trying to rid these poor souls of their delusions and hallucinations.
So people saw ghosts and that was it?
Yeah.
But slowly, he started to hear the whispers too. Gradually, his own mind became infected with a different kind of plague, a darker kind. In his dreams, in the dark corners of the hospital, in broad daylight, he saw them, festering sores and pustules leaking, crying out with soundless voices for help that would never come, urging him to go on with his work.
He would carry out his most special and particular experiments in the bell tower, where the whole island could hear the screams echoing out. But his deeds caught up to him.
Whether it was an escaping patient, a disgruntled colleague, the madness caused by what he had done, or something darker and more inhuman than even he was, he fell to his death one night from the bell tower. But according to the nurse who witnessed the fall, it wasn't the end. She saw him hit the ground, but noticed he was still alive following the impact. Alive, that is, until a dark mist gathered around him, choking the last little bit of life left in him before dissipating into the night, leaving only the broken body of the former doctor behind.
He hasn't left the island, though, and some locals believe that he's cursed to remain there forever due to what he did. On a still night, you can still hear the steady peal of the tower bell, rung by a ghostly hand.
That's really creepy. And yeah. I know the whole thing is creepy, like the island, but the fact that he was basically going as mad as the people he believed were in there.
And also, you've got to allow for a certain bit of urban legend to be like to be put into there, a bit of embellishment. But I find it interesting, the nurse's story, in that she heard some sort of scuffle upstairs and then saw him come out of the bell tower, hit the floor, and then the mist. And she repeated that story a couple of times. So it's like, if she lied about it, she would embellish it, but apparently it was the same story every time.
But how horrendous is the fact that he was still alive? Like, I know what he did was horrendous, but like...
But with the impact, to still be alive and be broken, and yeah. It would not have been a quick death.
No. I guess he kind of maybe deserved it by this point.
Yes.
Venture over to the east of Prevalia Island now, past the buildings towards the east coast, and you will come to a small strip of open land called the Plague Field. Ah, that's nice. Let's go and frolic in the Plague Field. Tread carefully as the bones of thousands of plague victims are buried there. In fact, it is claimed that over 50% of the soil surface on Prevalia, down to the bedrock, is made up of human remains.
Lovely.
Sorry if I sounded really chirpy, but it's one of those things that's like, yeah, let's go to this place. Never, absolutely not.
You're smiling through the trauma.
Yeah.
If you stand silently in the field and listen closely, it's reported that you can hear the cries and coughs of the plague victims buried beneath you.
No.
You may even be able to hear the screams of the poor asylum patients mixed in with them.
Hearing things away from me, creepy, but all right. Hearing things beneath my feet, absolutely not.
Just absolutely like, no, no.
On the north of the island, you will find the burning field. No surprises guessing what happened there.
You're getting the lovely descriptions, aren't you?
Many report being able to smell sulphur and burning wood, along with more putrid smells here. Fishermen won't fish near the island, as they claim that the ashes of the dead can still be carried from these fields by the wind. Not to mention the times when human bones have been dragged up in fishing nets near the island after coastal erosion washed them into the sea.
Yeah. Guess whereabouts the vineyard is?
Oh, no.
If you are brave enough to enter the buildings here, you can expect, at the very least, to be touched, pushed, slapped, and even choked by unseen forces.
Really? Wow.
Sorry. This was a private joke about unseen forces, and that's why I put it in there. Sorry.
I was not prepared. It is claimed that a family came to the island with the hopes of making it their home. Why?
I mean, why not? It's prime real estate.
They only to leave after one night, with their daughter needing 14 stitches due to a laceration mark on her face. Nobody was able to explain how she sustained the wound.
Nope. Just that massive, like, it would look like something had tried to cleave her face off.
Well, maybe it was the Bundy family. Yeah.
All of these stories only seem to encourage explorers who want to visit the island for themselves, sometimes through the proper channels, other times more illegally. Those that risk it can gather some interesting evidence if they can last the night. But even the island itself doesn't recommend that you try.
If you are brave enough to try, you can obtain the proper permissions, or not, and you can charter a boat to take you there, though the captain will most likely not stay with you. You can climb ashore and have a look around in the daylight, taking it all in. You can set up your equipment and decide to head into the abandoned mental hospital. You can pause and take a look around at the building falling to ruin.
That's when it will hit you. The feeling that you are being watched, that you are definitely not alone. A heavy sense of dread will creep upon you. You'll take a look around to check, but there's nobody there.
Then you hear it. That deep voice will whisper right in your ear. Leave immediately and do not return. Everyone who has heard that voice has complied. Would you?
Yes.
100%. Absolutely. Holy shit.
But yeah, that is apparently what that voice says. Every time someone hears it, the voice always says, either leave now or leave immediately and never return. And you just be like, yeah, okay, cool, bye. Bye-bye. This is not happening.
Honestly, like, I kind of want to see how Destination Fear do, because that's one that we really watch.
Mm.
I have a feeling Chelsea would just probably cry the whole time.
Yeah.
Dakota would try and be all hardcore, but be terrified.
Mm.
Alex would be similar to us and be like, absolutely not. Yeah. Like, why are we doing this?
What has my life come to right
and
now?
And Tamla would just laugh, one of those hysterical, like, what are we doing?
Yep. Well, they haven't done it yet, but the Ghost Adventures crew have.
Have they?
They have.
Is it an episode?
Yeah, it's an episode.
Oh, I need to watch that. Yeah, I want to see it.
It is interesting. I mean, it's dramatic and it's fun, and they do have a laugh because they're not always serious. But some of the things they get are interesting.
What channel can their people watch that on if they want to see this island on a television show?
Either on Really, on Sky, or through Discovery Plus. Or the Travel Channel, if you are an American listener.
And it is Ghost Adventures.
Yeah, Ghost Adventures with Zach Baggins and friends.
Cool. Nice little plug for them too. We think we did this one.
And if they ever want to sponsor us, you know, guys, love your show. But yeah, that's Failure Island.
It's got to be, there's got to be stuff that happens on there.
What, 100%. There are a lot of...
Do birds fly over it?
I don't actually know.
I ask because a lot of the times in places where a lot of death has occurred, they don't. Because I went to Sachsenhausen concentration camp when I was doing GCSE history, and no birds flew over the concentration camp whatsoever.
They say that about Auschwitz, and it was the same when I went to Ground Zero as well. It's deathly quiet. Even though you can see the main road, it's deathly quiet. Mm-hmm. There's no birds.
Yes, I wonder if there's any birds that fly, because it's a whole island.
I don't know. It's like it leaves a scar somehow that animals know.
Well, they say that animals are quite... Because dogs are quite... dogs and cats can see ghosts.
That's why if you go into a place and a dog won't go in there, you should probably think twice.
And a lot of the time when my dog barks out of my window and there's nobody walking down the drive.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely something in my driveway.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely.
Like, we've seen things out the corner of our eye.
See things, feel things,
hear the gravel
things.
Crunch, and it's like...
And so when Dudley runs and just starts barking out the window at nothing, I'm like, cheers. Thanks, Duds.
No. Yeah, maybe we should take Dudley to Pavilion and just hold him just in front of the island and be like, should we go? Should we not?
Nah, Dudley might feel it from Italy.
Yeah.
We'll just land in the country somewhere and he'll be like, nope. Just nope.
Just in his doggy voice, there is great darkness here.
I'd like to think Dudley has some sort of, like...
It was just some really well-spoken, like, Vincent Price, Christopher Lee kind of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe with a Patrick Stewart or Ian McKellen twang.
Yeah.
Like a distinguished gentleman that sounds like he could murder you.
Your dog, the great Shakespearean actor.
Okay, Dudley's a dachshund for context. He's this teeny tiny little sausage dog that sounds... horrendous when he barks.
When we put this up and we post it on Instagram, I think we should just put a picture of Dudley on there as well. It's like the Begley Island plague mask Dudley. You'll listen to the episode to understand. But yeah, he's a lovely dog. He's a lovely dog.
I can just picture him now, but like, No, you foolish mortals.
I think we should just show him a picture and he'd be like, absolutely not, ladies, let's not. I decide against this.
Or maybe Stewie's voice from Family Guy.
Yeah. I'm not going to do an impression.
No, don't.
Right.
So, that is Pavilion Island.
I wasn't joking when I said it's dark.
It is very dark.
Yeah. It is. It's one of those places I would love to go, but at the same time, there's a small part of me that's like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Don't think I could be there in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
definitely not sleep there.
But I wouldn't want to be there in the dark, but at the same time, I'd also really want to investigate. Because
I wouldn't want to be able, if there's a group of us, of people I trusted.
Yes.
To not, like, make me jump.
But I would not sleep there unless someone I trusted was keeping watch next to me.
I don't think I could sleep. I'd just be awake the whole time.
Yeah. So, I sleep during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Cool. Well, we have our usual segment, but we have decided we are adding a new segment to our podcast. Dun, 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 dun. You can think of one in the top of your head.
Yeah, I probably could actually.
So, a new segment called Carrie's Random Fact.
Bum, ba, dum, ba, dum, bum, random fact.
Carrie is full of useless knowledge.
It's true, it's true.
But some of them are quite like, alright. So, we decided we're going to add a Carrie's Random Fact of the podcast.
Okay.
I don't think we were supposed to start it this week, but I've just landed it upon you.
You know what? It's fine. I can work under pressure.
Cool, you can do this. So, Carrie, what is your random fact?
My random fact of today is there was a king who unified the Scandinavian countries. His name was Harald. And when you have names and things, they used to write in runes because they would carve on stone. Runes were easier to write on because it's angular. And when they tried to put a name together or nicknames, then they would use what's called a bind rune, which is multiple runes all linked in together. And Harald's bind runes were like a rune shaped like an X and a rune shaped like a B. And they kind of put them together, so it's half X, half B. And it's a symbol of unification, connection. And Harald's nickname was Bluetooth, Harald Bluetooth. So the Bluetooth logo that you see now is the bind rune for Harald Bluetooth.
That is sick. I did not know that.
Yeah. You're going to look at it.
And you just like, literally thought of that on your head. See, I told you, she's full of useless random shite.
I was just like, ah, panic, Bluetooth. Okay. I don't know why.
So there's Carrie's random fact. Do you random fact song again?
Da-da-da-da-da, random fact.
Nice. You got to remember that now. That is the new tune.
Yeah, that tune might change every single week.
Okay, so now we're going to go to our
regular scheduled audio viewing.
What?
What? I don't know. My brain farted. Yeah, oh. Our scheduled programming. That's the Please continue.
Oh, ridiculous death. Now, the problem is with this, Carrie.
Yeah.
I researched this one.
Yes.
You do not know what this one is.
No, I do not.
But I can't pronounce 90% of the words. Okay. So I feel that you're going to have to do this without knowing what it's going to be.
Okay.
So, right. You don't read my notes ahead. Just go from the top and work your way through, because we'll get an actual reaction in the way you speak it.
Okay. Carondas was a celebrated lawgiver of Catania in Sicily. It's uncertain when he lived. Some identify him as a pupil of Pythagoras, so circa 580 to 504 BE/BCE. BC/BCE. Blah, blah, blah.
Words.
But all that can be said is that he lived earlier than Anaxilus of Regium, which was 494 to 476 BCE. And his laws were used by the Regians until they were abolished by Anaxilus. His laws, originally written in verse, were adopted by other Chalcidic colonies in Sicily and Italy.
So basically he created laws in Italy.
Yeah.
And everyone followed them for a while.
Fair enough. According to Aristotle, Brainbox, there was nothing special about these laws, except that Carondas introduced actions for perjury. But he speaks highly of the precision with which they were devised. So it's like, there's nothing special about them, but you know, he did think about them pretty well. We'll give him that. Anyway, one such law he issued was that anyone who brought weapons into the assembly must be put to death. I think I know where this is going. One day, he arrived at the assembly seeking help to defeat some brigands in the countryside, but with a knife still attached to his belt. In order to uphold his own law, he committed suicide. What?
you went through a journey.
I expected that he would be killed, that somebody would do it for him. I didn't expect that he would, you know, full on go be like, you know what, fair enough.
He ran into this like, help me, there's people in the countryside wanting to kill her. Oh no. Someone go and help them, I'm dead.
Yes.
I've got to die. Can other people go and help because I walked into this room with a knife.
It's like, you know what, I asked for this, quite literally. Go and help them, I'm beyond help, goodbye.
Literally, he ran in to be like, we need to get like people out there to defend us. But not me, because I have to kill myself now, because I ran in with a knife.
That's almost as bad as that Oriental princess who they couldn't touch her, so she
drowned. Siam, the Queen of Siam.
That's it, I couldn't remember what country it was. Yeah, it's almost as, it's so ridiculous. Or Pythagoras running and couldn't touch the beans. Couldn't touch the field of beans, so he let his murderers catch him. I mean, people are stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
So, but I really liked, you were able to hear back in your voice the journey you went on in that.
It's like, I had an idea of
you
where
started
going
off happy,
in my head.
Then you're like, oh, now I know this is going. He. What?
He did it himself?
Yeah.
I half expected them to be like, oh, yeah, well, after that he was arrested and he was killed and it's his own stupid law, haha, silly idiot. But I was like,
No,
he. I mean, did he do it there and then? Or did he just be like, oh. Done.
I don't know. But he did.
Anyone listen to that is not going to know the action I just did.
She stabbed
herself.
She's going
to hear the weird noise.
She pretended to stab herself. But yeah. So, but I don't know whether the brigands were defeated.
Yeah.
The ones that he came to. That's almost like being like, help, help. There's someone outside trying to kill. Oh no. Can you go sort him out? I've got to kill myself.
Yeah.
I ran in here with a knife.
If anybody happens to know the fate of these brigands, can I please let us know? Oh my gosh, I just, yeah.
Yeah, that happened.
I can't, why?
Which I'm pretty sure, yes, he created the laws and, you know, you should lead by example, government, lead by example, but I'm pretty sure running in to be like, quickly, you need to help us defend where we live. You may have been like, you know, you shouldn't have gone in there with that knife, but we understand you're okay.
Yeah, but imagine being the people that he left behind to go and get help. And they're there and they see these people like, he did it, where is he? What's happened? Did the brigands get him? No, he got himself. What?
Is he coming back to help? No.
He's not really in a position to help anybody anymore. He's ever so slightly distracted.
Wow. But yeah. Yeah. So my ridiculous death is to
Charondas of Catania in Sicily. Or Catania. I may have said that wrong, I'm sorry. But yeah, wow.
Yeah, so we stayed in Italy for this week's ridiculous death.
What a twit.
Yeah.
Right, so we will be back in 2 weeks' time.
With a very special episode in 2 weeks.
Do, 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 do. Spoilers.
Do, 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 do. Do 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 do
do do do. No, okay,
we can't do this.
Yeah, we'll be back for a very special one. In the meantime, we are going to go on with Shrek rehearsals, and by that point, the show should have finished. So,
oh my
god, I'm slightly exhausted, which is really weird.
Yeah, the day the one in a fortnight comes out is the day of our last show.
Yes. Creepy. It's just crazy. Weird. It's gone so quickly. So we will probably be exhausted, which is why we're going to record it in advance. But we hope that you enjoy, and yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, if you want to suggest anything, because we're currently going to be starting our plan for the rest of the year, because we want to get back to doing fortnightly.
Yes.
So if you've got any ideas or anyone you want us to talk about, any event, place, person, get in touch. You can do that via our socials, which are at Cup of Histity on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. Or you can email us at cupofhistity@outlook.com.
And we are planning, though we have yet to actually do it, to get a TikTok started.
I mean, we've got the TikTok account created for a year. There's just no content there.
Yeah, we keep meaning to do it, but it will be on there somewhere. So keep an eye out if you are TikTok savvy.
Yeah, we should go on there.
Yeah, we should. We should have some fun. We should have done the drinks with that.
Yeah, Tyson Fury. Can you imagine if we were a history podcast and we get sponsored by Tyson Fury Energy Drinks?
History, it packs a punch.
We're writing it for yourself, Tyson. Get in touch, man. Right, we better go. These energy drinks have a lot to answer for.
Yep. We'll see you later. And bye. Thank you for keeping it dark.